This is Andy Orme at O'Reilly. I have been having conversations this week with people who are going to be speaking at the open source convention on healthcare. I talked to Brian Behlendorf yesterday about NHIN and Connect at the Health and Human Services. And today we have Arian Malik, who's the coordinator for the NHIN Direct project and a frequent blogger, I think. Is that right?
Yes, I try.
Yes. So tell us a little bit about why NHIN Direct started. Why not just use Connect?
Sure. So let me step back before I answer that question.
Because there's actually a good idea, I admit that.
There's a bunch of stuff embedded in that question. So I'm going to actually step back and say why NHIN Direct. So we'll start there. And then we'll go to the rather than Connect. One of the original impetuses for the NHIN Direct project was a really, really, really good meeting of the HIT Standards Committee. For people who don't know, the HIT Standards Committee was created out of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, which put in play a significant amount of money for creation of an expansion of a nationwide health information infrastructure, and a large part of that went to providers, healthcare providers, hospitals, doctors, the like, in order to adopt and meaningfully use electronic health records. And meaningful use, one of the brilliant things about that is that meaningful use is defined not in terms of features and functions of a piece of software, but in terms of what you do. And by and large, what you do is defined in terms of how you improve the health and healthcare of Americans. And a lot of improving the health and healthcare of Americans, some of that drives with what a provider does inside his or her practice. So, do they ask you questions about your smoking habits, for example, or do they get lab data on you and do the right thing with that lab data? But also a lot of what's required to improve the health and healthcare of Americans has to do with what happens in between providers. So the traditional practice of medicine is all about somebody shows up with a problem, the doctor diagnoses the problem, and provides prescribes the appropriate remedy for that problem. The problem goes away. Everyone's happy. But a lot of the diseases, a lot of the health problems that cause both negative outcomes for patients, both the pain and suffering for patients, as well as healthcare costs, are chronic diseases. And in chronic diseases, you see patients over and over, over their life. And those patients see more than one provider. And it's really important that when you get referred from your primary care provider to your specialist, that your specialist actually has all of the information that they need to make good treatment decisions for you. If they don't know what medications you're on, they may prescribe something that's the appropriate therapy for what you have, but interacts with something else that you're already on, or duplicates something else that you're already on. If they don't know the reason that you're there and all the other problems that you have, they may make a misdiagnosis. So the ability to get access to, with the patient's consent, get access to all of the relevant information to make good treatment decisions is a critical part of driving the outcomes, the quality outcomes and the efficiency and cost outcomes, as well as the patient access outcomes that we're trying to drive to in the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, in the act, sub-act called the HITECH Act. You'll sometimes hear it both as ARA and as HITECH. So going back to where I started, out of the HITECH Act, there was created the HIT Standards Committee, which has a job to recommend or to make recommendations to the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology and to Health and Human Services on standards for recognition and adoption and certification. That committee decided to form a work group that looked at a pretty basic question, which is how are standards actually being used? Who's using them? And how are standards developed in industries outside of healthcare? And that meeting, which was in October of 2009, was a really fascinating meeting. And I think one of the more interesting parts of that meeting was a provider who told essentially a story of adoption of health information technology. Now, he'd done what we want providers to do across the country. He had enthusiastically adopted an electronic health record and was using it inside his practice to improve his care of patients, and loved it and loved the outcomes. But he was also trying to get electronic data from the other providers in his community, and he was frustrated by that because the lingua franca, if you will, for health information exchange, for exchanging information between two providers, is the fax machine. And the fax machine's ubiquitous, right? That's good. But it's paper. It doesn't allow you to take the information electronically and do interesting things with it. It doesn't generate a lot of really good, really elegant workflows for the provider to make sure that all that information is available at the point of care when they're making the treatment decisions. So he told a story about he was based in Pennsylvania, and he had a patient who was moving to Arizona. And he happened to know, because he recommended the provider that she was going to go see in Arizona, he happened to know the provider that she was going to go see, and he happened to know that they were both on the same electronic health record. And he happened to know that he could export a summary, a snapshot, if you will, of the current health status of the patient, what problems she had, what medication she was on, what allergy she had, those kinds of things.
That's a continuity of care document, I suppose.
Correct. In this case, actually, I think it was a continuity of care record, and I won't bore you with the details between the difference between continuity.
However, at the open source convention, people can find out all about it.
Absolutely, and there's a lot to find out there. The provider that he was referring over to could import that same document and get access to all the information, but he was stuck. He didn't have any way of securely sending that document to the provider that he's referring to.
And HIPAA made it very important to follow rules about security.
Security. So it would be inappropriate for him to email it over the open internet and not encrypted. Actually, I think what he ended up doing was zipping it and encrypting the zip and sending it over email to the other provider. That's not something that a lot of physicians have A, the time to do, and B, the technology competence to do. So what we really want to do is make sure that all those kinds of transitions in care, every time I order a lab result from the lab for a patient, that it comes back to me electronically. Every time I refer a patient over to specialty care, that the referral goes electronically. And every time that the specialist treats the patient, that they can send back information electronically. And to do that, we need to make sure that there's a simple, obvious way to do that transport and address the message. Now, it was a long introduction, but I'm then going to address the question of, okay, we've got Connect. Connect is an open source product that implements many of the healthcare standards for information transfer. What Connect does is help two organizations, and an organization could be as small as a physician practice, but typically organizations are hospitals and hospital systems, large federal providers like the VA, share information amongst themselves. Now, Connect allows you to take the same standards and use them for a bunch of different use cases and uses. And there are providers who are installing Connect and using it for connectivity. But because of the design of Connect, you have to know the SOAP endpoint that you're initiating your transaction to before you can transmit the data. And that's not, I think, the most elegant way for a provider to push information to another provider. What we really want to do is have something that looks, from a workflow perspective or from a kind of internet magic perspective, a lot like email. But we want to add on top of it the privacy and security that's required for health information exchange, as well as a good description of what information is being transferred so that the receiving system can make good decisions about what to do with the received information. So it's kind of like structured, secure email for healthcare. And that was really the genesis for the NHN Direct project, was develop specifications that make it simple, obvious, and cheap how to do that, and then create health internet addresses for all the providers in the country and then potentially for all the patients in the country so that we can all send and receive health information.
It sounds like you had looked at what the providers need and what Connect offered, and you saw that this was somewhat 1990s style SOAP technology, and you looked at what's going on the web with REST and OpenID and so forth and said, we want something more like what thousands of programmers are doing right now for healthcare.
So I'm sympathetic to that point of view. I think one of the things that people need to understand about the healthcare industry is that just like the financial services industry, you wouldn't expect to go into financial services where there are a lot of open source programming jobs, for example. You wouldn't expect to go into financial services and have it behave the same way that you might use to program to an Amazon AWS service. The set of privacy and security requirements that you have for Amazon AWS are slightly south of what you need for financial services. And so you're going to expect that you're going to need to learn something new when you go into financial services. And so some of that's going to sound a little bit like alphabet soup when you go into that market. We did definitely have a goal of simplifying the set of specifications and making sure that they were addressable to a wide variety of programmers. We also recognize that there's a lot of art and a lot of prior practice in health information exchange. And some of that 1990s SOAP technology is actually pretty state-of-the-art for healthcare. And so we didn't go into this biased towards the technology model that we wanted to develop. We did go into it biased towards the simplicity that we wanted to develop for the individual provider, as well as the simplicity that we wanted to develop for programmers programming against the resulting specifications.
So there is something of a stack involved. You have the handshakes and the authorization, authentication. You have data exchange. So maybe you could give us a little overview of the things that you're designing now, the standards that you're looking at in Indirect.
Well, the first thing that I actually want to go to talk about is the process that we used, because we wanted to, in this project, learn from essentially how standards get developed in the real world and on the internet. And standards are always a little bit of sausage making. But one of the things that we wanted to make sure that we did in developing the specifications that we were targeting was to develop those specifications with running, working, tested code. And to deliver according to the internet model of rough consensus working code. In order to test out the question about what's the right specification to develop, we actually had teams develop working software that exercised an SMTP model for how to do this, you know, looking at, well, if this is simple, secure, structured email, maybe it should just be SMTP. We looked at a REST interface and built a couple of implementations of a REST stack. And then we also looked at a SOAP-based approach that builds on the set of health information exchange standards that currently exist for healthcare. I have to say right now we're still in the middle of that work. We're getting close to getting final consensus on the right path going forward. And at this point in time, I can't tell you what the outcome will be. I can just tell you what the process is. It's likely to be either SMTP as the backbone with a bunch of different ways of doing it on the front end, or it's actually likely to be SOAP on the backbone with a bunch of different ways of doing it on the front end.
I really appreciate that you went through all this consultation and thinking, because there's an image among many people that government agencies are these huge bureaucracies that wave sticks and carrots in huge bunches. But actually, you were saying, we want you to have meaningful use, we want to improve care, and we realize that it's hard for you to do with available tools, so we will actually help you develop tools.
Correct, and we have no interest in premature standardization or forcing you to do something. What we do have an interest in doing is identifying a problem, bringing together the people, the organizations that have an interest in solving that problem for the providers in this country, and putting together a lightweight, nimble process to solve that problem. Meaningful use, again, is not a top-down, drive everybody to do the same thing process. It's actually, one of the really elegant things about it is that it doesn't define the set of features and functions you need to implement. It defines the outcomes that you need to achieve. And it doesn't even say that you need to use one set of technology to fulfill all those outcomes. And in fact says you can assemble lightweight, cloud-based services to satisfy all of the key criteria for meaningful use, as long as you can make sure that they interoperate and exchange information among them. We made sure that this was an instance of open government and government 2.0. Conducted all of our business using a wiki. I blogged extensively to keep people abreast as to what was going on. And one of the reasons we did that is that specifications and standard processes are often dominated by the organizations that can most afford to send people and spend the time to do the work. Those people are doing great work, but sometimes we miss the voice of organizations that can't do that. And we really wanted to make sure that all of the decisions that we were making were publicly accessible on the internet, on the wiki at anindirect.org, and that we had an open architecture for participation.
You accomplished quite a lot. Is there something that developers can do at this point?
Well, we hope to very soon have the specification finalized. And once we have the specification finalized, we will be building out an open source reference implementation, maybe two. Part of what we're trying to do with that open source reference implementation is to develop an elegant API to the core features of the transport, so that I can abstract away, for example, what's required to create metadata, what's required to send a message, and deal with a simple, elegant client API. So we would love to see the open source community help out with that problem. And help us develop a really strong reference implementation. We also believe that there is a role for cloud-based services for doing or for hosting the kinds of information exchange that we're trying to drive to. And we believe that there's a role for technologists to create both the open source libraries for being able to host cloud-based services, as well as building the cloud-based services themselves. And then we believe that there's a role to implement the specifications into existing healthcare systems, some of which are proprietary-based, but many of which are and increasingly are open-source-based. And we believe there's both an innovation model, a great pathway for developers to get involved, and then all kinds of paths to realize an economic return as well as a social return out of that work, because healthcare and health information technology is, for a variety of reasons, part of which is the set of federal incentives that we have, and part of it is just that we've got a drastic need to improve quality and outcomes in this country. Healthcare and health information technology in particular is a booming field with a ton of interest. A personal note, I'm one of these people that comes from a startup culture, lived in the Bay Area all my life, and like many people in that culture, have that kind of restless approach to change and innovation. One of the things that I've been really pleased with in healthcare is that there is so much to do in this industry and so much to learn that it never gets boring. It's always interesting, and there is a lot to do.
You found a receptive place to plug in the government too.
Oddly enough, right? So you started off saying that the perception of government is hidebound, bureaucratic, change resistant. And the government is like any other large institution. Anybody who's worked for a large institution will know that there are pockets of innovation everywhere. And all you need to do is tap into those pockets of innovation. So, for example, Todd Park, who put together the open health data project to take public health data and make it publicly accessible. His entire job right now is to look for the innovators inside government, discover them, find them, and expose them to the rest of the world and the rest of the U.S. innovation system, to make sure that we can combine the best of what government has and what private industry has. I've heard the Office of the National Coordinator described as the only $2 billion startup. We've got a $2 billion budget, but we've also got a great set of really change-minded, change-oriented people who are here on a mission to change the world. And that's, if I look at what I love about the startup culture, it is that you are you're mission-driven. You're working. You're doing impossible things on tight timeframes, and your goal is to exert meaningful change, and you're in an environment where you're learning constantly, shifting constantly, and adapting in real time, and that's exactly what's happening here.
So let's summarize here. I'm going to be kind of bold, and you can correct me again if necessary. It seems like NHIN Direct has many effects. It's going to affect the organizations that are now doing health information exchange and making new opportunities to produce, as you say, cloud-based services. It's going to become an application platform for people producing the software that the doctors will use. And it's going to feed data back into the kind of services that Health and Human Services wants to offer, data for consumption.
With that last point, I think that may be true. I just want to recognize that the kinds of data that we're talking about transporting often are the sensitive, protected health information for you and me. And you know, we don't want that data actually being sent over to be warehoused somewhere. Where we do think that there may be a use here is there's all kinds of uses for the ability to take anonymized data, to take summary data, and post it to quality registries to make sure that we're getting real-time intelligence on what's happening in the world. So a great example of that that I'm actually familiar with is there's a taking the anonymized incidence data of prescribing patterns. So how many times is Tamiflu prescribed, and then using those signals and using that that non-personally identifiable information to make inferences about public health. Is there a flu epidemic coming on? Is there an unusual flu epidemic coming on? Those kinds of systems and access to that information in real time can produce a capability of being able to respond much faster to emergent events and take the right action. So absolutely, this is both about taking care of patients and taking care of us, and making sure that our health is better protected, as well as taking some of that same kind of data, anonymizing and summarizing it, and making it available for real-time signal detection to improve our to improve our health on a population basis. So there is so much innovation in this area, so much to do, and it's a great time to be here.
I appreciate that you're going to fly out to Portland and do a session on all this. And it sounds like you're moving so fast that in a month you'll have even more to report
about. Absolutely.
So I think we'll wrap it up now. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you very much, Andy.